Hey, Project Nerd fans, welcome back to another episode of I'm Not Famous. An oversight on my part, because it's never been just an I'm not famous. It's actually, we're not famous. Carrie and myself, Iggy, you're not famous. Don't pretend like you're still not famous. And we're here this week with Dan Chick, light painting photographer, light painter, all those things. Artist. We'll go with artist. Oh, that's what it is for sure. So how you doing this week?
I'm good. I was thinking the name of your podcast, though, it should be like, I'm not famous yet.
That's when we get, so when we get to that point to where we start bringing in money with it, we'll change it to I'm not famous yet. And then eventually when we're San Diego Comic-Con moderating level, then we'll be, we're kind of famous.
Yeah, kind of famous.
And then when we get to do like the AMC's like Talking Dead show and stuff like that, that's when we can be like...
Big in Japan.
Right, big in Japan. There you go, that's the next step. Famous in Japan. Famous in three countries, right? I don't know, we're pretty popular in Brazil, so
yeah.
By complete accident. So there's another podcast there called Project Nerd in Brazil, and people just constantly stumble on Project Nerd and listen to our podcast from Brazil.
That's funny.
So about 30% of our podcast listeners to the Nerdcast on Project Nerd, I think we're originally looking for Project Nerd podcast, but they listen to us now.
We're going to figure out Portuguese. And we're going to confuse them even more.
Do it.
By misspeaking it.
Well, I can't help you with that one today.
Awesome. Well, like I said, we're just kind of talking stuff, but we were looking at some of your pictures earlier, some of the light painting stuff. Pretty awesome. We're talking about you working with friends that I didn't even realize moved already. Sorry, Rebecca and Sterling. Sorry. But yeah, like pretty cool stuff. I know Carrie's already asked some questions regarding, but it's just, it's crazy. What would you, if you were to describe it, like in what statement, in one sentence, like what, how would you describe what you do?
What light painting is?
Yes.
All right. So there's a bare bones level, and then there's like the actual art level of it.
Okay.
But the basic technique involves, like, if you've ever seen a picture where the shutter's open and a car drives by and you get a light trail, it's kind of like doing that, but with much more intent. And so using moving lights or stencils, prisms, all kinds of different tools to do lighting effects within a single camera exposure. And it's not created in the computer at all. It's all done in the camera.
Okay. And you showed the sparkler motion earlier.
Yeah, I did. Well, as we were talking off camera and just getting into it now, I tried it once. And the motion that I was making, you said it was a sparkler, right? So I lit off a sparkler and the shutter is trying to capture the light. And then as you're trying to bring the sparkle, you're making a motion, you're making art at that point. Would you call it more amateur level? So going into what you do, what type of capturing are you doing? How do you set it up? What are you actually capturing? And what does the final production look like?
So a lot of people do get their start with the sparklers. And I mean, that's legitimate because, you know, it's a way of controlling a light. It's got the cast-off sparks are a really nice effect. And you do it once by accident maybe, and then you think, hey, maybe I can do this for real. But a lot of it involves flashlights, different colored lights, oftentimes many lights in the same photo. So you might light one side of somebody's head with one color and then do a special effect. There's a lot of attachments for flashlights too, acrylic shapes, diamonds, feathers. There's a place called lightpaintingbrushes.com and they sell a lot of these that attach pretty easily to the same connector system. And black fiber optic brush is a nice one. And basically you're just using light in different ways. Sometimes you're pointing it at the camera, which is a lot brighter, and that's going to leave more streaks. Or sometimes you're pointing onto a person or a scene. Maybe you're in the forest and you paint a tree red with light. And this tree over here is blue or orange. And then maybe you get a person in the middle, maybe it's, you know, just the scene. But there's really, you know, the sky's the limit as far as what you do. My own personal take, I like to bring a science angle to it. So I'm doing a lot with geometry, bending light with prisms, shooting through open-ended kaleidoscopes. So anything that can change the path of light over the course of a long exposure is kind of how I roll. And a long exposure could be anything from a half second to 30 minutes.
30-minute exposure, huh?
Don't do that very often because those take a while.
Yeah.
But 2 or 3 minutes is pretty common.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you can be honest with us here, outside of just being better than Jeff at something, what made you go from photography to, like, a further step with it?
Actually,
that was a
this
jab at our producer, by the way.
Who's also the fluffer.
Fluffer. He's the fluffer. Yeah. So
you are trying to keep up with that earlier episode. let's see. I actually burned out on doing conventional photography and had stopped shooting for about 5 years. And I wish I could remember the article or the webpage I saw that really talked about, that was my gateway to this. I remember some things I saw early on, but I'd gotten a bit bored of shooting model photography, and I'd done that for about 10 years and had done reasonably well with it, and just it didn't seem like it was what I wanted to spend my time on. And so light painting was a way of taking it in a different direction where you kind of have to earn each picture, and you don't necessarily know everything you're going to get until the shutter's closed. And it brought a lot more life into what I wanted to do. There's a bit more chaos to it. It's definitely a bit more engineered as a picture because you have to have things that happen to certain orders, certain steps sometimes. But it added a different element to the pictures, and it kind of just brought my love for photography back, even though it's a little bit of a different twist on what photography is.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that like sparks, and you get tired of it, but then something sparks it and brings you kind of back to it, and it feels even better because it's like I love doing this. I already know some of it. Now I get to just explore even further, right? Like, so I don't know. It's pretty creative. But outside of the typical sparkler, somebody write a letter. You guys stand, four of you stand in a row and each write a letter, like that thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the most that most people really,
you'll see a lot about with it, know about it. Oh, and love. Oh yeah, those are the go-tos.
The wedding invitation photos with the
other one. Some people will see is spinning steel wool, where you set steel wool on fire and you spin it and the sparks fly off.
Really,
and people will do that as well. And there's a lot of that as kind of a gateway drug to light painting.
Gateway drug, I like it.
So you say that would be more like amateur related, right? Like that's something that would get someone into it. But what you're talking about when you're talking about a 30-minute exposure, right? That's something that you've really mastered at that point. Like you're going for one particular look. Like that's not an accidental photo at that point or painting.
I'd like to say I don't do accidental photos. You don't necessarily get the precision of knowing how each individual piece is exactly going to be.
Right.
But you do have to structure it. So it's all with intent.
Yeah.
And it is possible to do sparklers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you guys said you kind of cut your teeth. But you can also use sparklers in a 30-minute picture. Okay. So just because something might be that gateway drug for light painting photography doesn't mean you're not going to use it as a seasoned light painter. So I've done some neat stuff using 360 cameras and the steel wool, or using stencils, steel wool, stopping it, covering the lens so that the shutter is still running, and then adding other elements as well. So regardless of how you start, there are ways of using those tools in different ways.
Are they an accent piece at that point then? Because it seems like we were using it as, that was our, you know, drawing a heart, drawing a letter. Are you?
You don't know what I was drawing.
I'm sorry. I don't know what four-letter words you were drawing for sparklers. But is that more of an accent, like the sparkler would be going off, but you would still be doing other aspects? Because looking at your stuff on online, like Instagram, it's very elaborate. There's multiple colors. There's also different shapes and different overall perspectives of that picture. So it seems like there's multiple elements, not just like in our case, we're talking about one sparkler. Is there multiple pieces that are creating that visual you're going for?
In the stuff that I shoot, I'm almost always using multiple elements. A lot of people right now are finding their way into light painting via tubes, 4 foot long tubes, and you stick a flashlight in them, and it's a really big light painting brush. And Eric Perret up in Montreal has really pioneered that, and he's probably the best known light painter right now because he's got, you know, over 10,000 people who are part of his group, that, you know, probably even more than that, might be 100 at this point. But in his shots, you're basically just going to use a tube because he's shooting for 1 or 2 seconds maybe. But in a 2 or 3 minute shot, yeah, you're going to use different lights, maybe the sparkler, maybe something else, or you might use the same light 2 or 3 different times in different parts of the shot. So a couple weeks ago, maybe a month, we did a shoot down in a storm drain, and so the model was in the center, she was the focus, and whatever lighting techniques we did on the model, we used some sparklers to kind of draw on the edges,
right?
And so in that case they would absolutely be accents.
Okay.
But that one shot I just showed you beforehand, where there was a model in the middle and then like the sparklers coming out from behind her. Those, I think, were more than accents, and they were definitely part of the core piece.
Okay.
So it's all, I've never really thought about it as far as accent versus not, but yeah, it all adds up, and then you just kind of choose what you want the focus to be on.
Interesting.
Well, I like that with it, it's just something you don't think about with photography all the time, is that the same with filmmaking, all these other things. You don't have to just go one direction with it. There's not like, oh, I'm pretty good at photos, I just need to get better at this. No, it's you can, I mean, photography, you can, I just want to get really creative with this thing like you're doing, or want to go this direction. You know, it's such a wide world, I guess, that people often overlook.
I've actually found that the more experienced I get, the less wide my world is.
Okay.
I find the things that work, and I don't experiment as much as I used to. So I'm really kind of trying to challenge myself to go back to, wow, this sounds like a horrible and ridiculous idea, but maybe let's try it anyway.
Let's try it anyway. I mean, that's usually, and sometimes the best things come out of, well, that's a stupid idea.
Well,
oh,
if nothing
wow,
else,
it
you get a story.
Right, exactly.
But it also doesn't seem like this is a very wide form of photography, right? Like, this has to be a very small group of people that are performing this art.
That's absolutely true. It's global. You'll find people everywhere that do this, but only a couple.
Right.
A lot of people dabble. You know, you mentioned your experiences with it. People might try lighting up nature. Maybe it's a nighttime shot and you want to light up a tree and you're doing some astrophotography. You do that kind of stuff. But as far as people who are doing like the serious compositions like what I showed you there, it's a pretty tight scene.
Right.
So one of the things
it's
I liked...
It's big in Europe.
Oh, yeah. So everything's big in Europe. No, one of the things I liked is you're talking about with the Rad cosplay with Rebecca we mentioned earlier, and you did like a multi-panel... like Jessica Jones comic book thing. So it's something beyond just, like I said, writing letters or even zigzagging, like, you know, lights out from behind a person. But it's something that seems you can tell a story with, too. Like, it can be super elaborate, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Well.
Some single pictures can tell a story. In that case, we chose to use 8 different pictures. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just since we're talking techniques, the one picture in there that was my favorite, I'll just tell you how I put it together, but it was... the Kilgrave head floating over Luke Cage and Jessica Jones kind of fighting. And there's a panel with some text that goes into, you know, the comic book as well. And the way we shot that was we put the text onto a tablet, a computer tablet, and then used a really close-up lens, took a picture of the text on black, covered up the lens, actually took the lens off mid-shot, put a different lens on, and then... shot Luke and Jessica, covered it up, took a different lens on, and then did Kilgrave behind them. So we actually had 3 different lenses on the camera for that single shot.
That's how long was the shot?
3 or 4 minutes, probably.
Wow, like that's crazy. Like I thought.
When you all see this photo on Instagram, right? I believe we were looking on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly recommend you go look at it. Understanding that was. How did you come up with that approach?
Yeah, I mean, like the text looks like it is like comic, like
right.
You put a box,
that,
put text
that can't seem
on
like
afterwards.
It's like a known thing. Like you had to have just like you mentioned a moment ago. It seemed like that's experimental. Like you were trying to capture that, and the end result worked out really well. Or did you know going into it this was going to work?
I've been doing this long enough that I knew it was going to work.
Okay.
The question is where you blur the lines between. What you might, well, there's all kinds of different levels of purist of light painting. Some people, if they took a picture of a tablet, they would consider that kind of an outside art and not quite as pure as just waving lights
because
to create it.
Because you didn't generate the wording? You took a photo of a tablet?
If you do graphic design, you can put anything you want on a tablet.
Right, right.
So I've seen some really cool stuff where maybe somebody's head is floating inside of some kind of circuit board, and the circuit board was done on a tablet.
Okay.
So... in that sense, I've seen people do that before. I knew I could put the text in. Most people think the text is actually done in post.
That's what it looks like it.
But that my personal challenge is to see what I can do in a single shot. So if I can do it that way, I will. And my background is engineering physics, and I love understanding how things work. So if I do this, and then I have a stencil up, and then I move it, and then you've got light in front or behind, and then maybe you switch the lenses, and then you do the close-up on the text, you know, putting those pieces together is part of my satisfaction for it.
Yeah. So are you watching the Marvel shows on Netflix? Since we're talking about
I'm like a day behind. I haven't watched Iron Fist season 2
yet. Yeah, I know
it
dropped just yesterday. I haven't finished. I didn't finish Luke Cage.
I didn't binge watch.
I had to work yesterday. Unfortunately, I couldn't spend 10 hours.
We're about halfway through Cloak and Dagger.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, is Cloak and Dagger, what's that on? It was
Hulu.
Oh, did they drop it to Hulu?
It's on Hulu. I'm not sure if that's where it originated.
I think it started on some weird name network, because there's all the every day about this new streaming service.
It looked like it had fade to commercial moments, but they weren't on Hulu that way.
Yeah. They would be for me
because
I didn't pay. I had the commercial version. I don't anymore because I canceled my phone service that gave it to me for free.
But Nancy and I are quite enjoying Cloak and Dagger.
I mean, I've heard great things about it.
What is Cloak and Dagger? I'm sorry, I don't know what that is.
It's Marvel. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Two characters. How to explain it? It's like a
thing happens. They get powers that intertwined.
Gotcha.
They come together later in life where their powers manifest, and then one's dark, one's light.
And it turns out they work really well together.
Yeah.
So like Hancock. Wasn't that Hancock?
I mean,
with Charlize and Will Smith's character?
At a basic level, there's two powerful characters that impact each other's powers at that level. Probably a lot less language.
So PG version of Hancock.
They do touch on a lot of social themes, whether it's class or race. So it's been very interesting to watch that way.
Okay. Yeah, it's what I like about it is that it's another set of characters that if you've read comics you're familiar, but your question is really not that far out there, because people who didn't grow up reading comics, Cloak and Dagger is not a character that you saw on a Saturday morning cartoon or on a T-shirt in, you know, at Target or something. Like, it's a very one out there, and so that's what I've liked about this. To a degree, oversaturation of comic book content onto the screens, little screen or big screen, is we've gotten stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy, or Captain Marvel is about to play a huge role in the Marvel Universe, so you get Cloak and Dagger, or you get, as absurd as it can be at time, the CW show, The Heroes of Tomorrow or whatever. Like, so you get these characters that you wouldn't normally see on a screen. And I mean, it could be bad, because then now Green Arrow is like a 30 cast ensemble of characters. But in most times, it's like I said, it's introducing people to these characters that otherwise they would have never seen. And Cloak and Dagger in the comics touches on a lot of social issues. So it's a good platform to say, right now is the appropriate time to cover some of these social issues. You have a black and a white hero together here. Like, so it's something that can really cover some of those topics.
Mm-hmm. And actually doing some of the comic book stuff has been very interesting for light painting too, because a lot of the comic book characters have special powers in certain ways. You can shoot things that are your fingers, or your eyes, or, you know, you can use lights to make it look like you're floating. The first shoot that I did with Rebecca was Bombshell Harley Quinn. And so we kind of did that a bit more pinup style. The second time we did something that was cosplay related was Mercy from Overwatch.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I saw those ones on there.
Those were pretty fun. And then the Jessica Jones. And, you know, when you've got a reason for like these mystical lights to be there, it's even better.
Well, that's why I want to see you do Cloak and Dagger now, because you can have like with the smoke and the light like going too.
Dagger would be easy because the glowing knife is one thing, but actually making black stuff emanate—that's not how light painting works. So light painting, the way
black is the negative, right?
Black is where you start,
right?
And all you can do is make things brighter.
Yeah.
If you made it a negative image, you could, you know, do white and invert it, but
have Jeff shoot Cloak and Dagger then.
That's the challenge though. I'm kind of thinking.
So we're saying you're challenging you. Okay. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
So there are some ways, if you get clever, you can take a challenge and turn it into a success.
Mm.
So for instance, if I wanted to make black smoke, we can't necessarily add black to a picture, but you can blow smoke and light behind the smoke, and then you'll kind of have a shadow of the smoke. So you might be able to do something that way.
Yeah, see, that's what I was envisioning when I'm thinking.
So different textures. Is that what I understand?
You're adding the dark in front of the light.
Right.
So even though you can't create black, you're adding, by giving that depth, by putting the light behind it, you're technically still creating the black then up here, right? Like, that's what I'm interpreting it as.
Yeah, the smoke is blocking the light from getting to the camera.
Right.
So you're kind of creating a darkness, but you can't actually create a dark smoke using light. Because all you can do is make things lighter. And that actually is a challenge in light painting, is if you want to have maybe a spot where someone's face is shining through, or just any kind of, when you do your lights and they're going to layer, you have to be very conscious of the fact that you can't, there's no undo, there's no delete. If you light something, it's going to be in the shot, and then you can put something that's really bright on top of it, and it'll kind of make that first bit go away maybe, but there is no undo. So every time you splash a little bit of light, there's going to be a bit of cast off, and you have to control it as best you can.
What props are you using? You mentioned the the Brillo pad, or the steel wool pad. Are there any other pieces that you use that help you create this art, or is it really just staging a light and then letting the kind of the camera do the work, or are you using other props that really give you the visual element that you're looking for?
There's a whole specialized ecosystem of building light painting tools. And I'd say the biggest ones right now are the tubes, the acrylic things with light shining through them, because you can get some neat shapes. The fiber optics are big. So, and then just using flashlights in general. Color change flashlights, maybe they fade from color to color. Maybe it's blue, red, green, white. But then beyond that, anything you can think of. When I started getting into light painting, started making my own tools, the first ones I made, I'd shoot through a pill bottle that I'd cut the end off, and I'd attach fuzzy pipe cleaners on the end, different colors. And as I twisted it, you'd get a little bit of orange, a little bit of red, a little bit of yellow, and suddenly you've got fire.
Okay.
Or metallic pipe cleaners, and you can get water, with blues and greens and whites. So you've got some of that stuff. And then there are a few of us that are kind of getting into physics class and doing stuff with prisms and kaleidoscopes and mirrors. Puddles, you just get the reflection, a little bit of ripple in the water, you can have something that's really crisp, and then you've got kind of this rippled light painting reflection as well. So anything you can think of that can bounce light, or that you can shoot light through, or that can block light, those are the tools.
So going on to that, obviously it seems like the most important tool you need is a camera.
Yep.
Right. So I think that,
I would assume, probably. Right? What particular camera do you use, or do you recommend to do this type of art?
So the nice thing about light painting is you can do it with any camera that can do long exposure. And you don't have to have, the $1,000 prime 1.4 lens, because you're not going to be using 1.4 aperture very often. You're going to be shooting, a lot higher, 5, 6, or 11 for you camera geeks out there. But any kind of kit camera that you can buy is going to do it. Now, you can do set timings of a second or 2 seconds or up to 30 seconds. And then past that, you've got bulb mode. And that's what most of us tend to shoot in, because then you can turn the picture off as soon as you're done. So the camera is important, but actually having a good wireless remote is probably the most important thing for me to have satisfaction. So I can trigger my camera from afar, stop it when I want it to, and have it be reliable. So that one, I think, has been the biggest source of frustration for a lot of people that I know. And then once you find one that works for you, then life gets a lot better.
So what's the most shots you've had to do to capture one image the way you've wanted to, if that makes sense?
Okay, let's go back. The one image the way I want to. So a couple years ago, Jeff was shooting the same night, actually. We were doing the meteor shower. But just over 2 years ago. And so we'd done some stuff, but then I wanted to take the sparkler technique. I was using a flashlight, but I wrote the word meteor, and I wanted to have a meteor fly by above me in the scene. The thing is, you can't predict meteors. I'm like, hey, I'm doing this, Mr. Meteor, it's time. No, I shot that.
You're like, hold a second. Okay.
Right? Well, I shot that 19 times waiting for the meteor to show up, and I went home completely certain that I didn't get a meteor. And I did find one like halfway through that caught a small meteor.
Okay.
So 19 is probably the most for one.
That's patience. I don't think I got that much patience.
No.
I know you don't.
I was impatient after the sparkler was done. Was
cool. And each of those is probably a 30-second shot.
Well, that was my next question. What's the longest exposure you've done? Like single
36 exposure? Minutes.
36 minutes.
And I could do it probably in about 2 minutes now using different techniques.
Okay.
But, you live, you learn. Mm-hmm. Other than that...
Well, how many people can say I took a 36-minute picture? I mean, people like 100 years ago or something like that.
No. Hold your smile.
Yeah, don't smile in pictures, because if you undo the smile.
So I was working with the model, and I was using L-wire, and I was kind of wrapping it around her various limbs to create this you'd have the stripy lights, but no actual human shape underneath it, other than what the cylinders of your body are going to do. But you'd wrap it, and then I'd cover the lens, and then I'd unwrap it, move it, wrap it again. And that's what took so long. And at one point during the shot, I didn't get the lens covered quite right, and I ended up getting a lens flare, which I didn't realize until the 36-minute shot was done. And it turns out that actually was a happy accident that made it even better.
Oh, yeah.
I got this little red flare that came in, and I mean, those are the sorts of things, if I could harness that and do that on demand, I'd love to.
Right. So you say happy accidents, just makes me think of
Bob Ross.
Yeah. It's like painting there with happy accidents. Awesome. Yeah. All right, so talked a lot about that, but then we kind of dove off into the Marvel shows a little bit. But what else are you geeking out on right now?
Well, I will just say real quick, there is a growing Colorado light painting community. I felt like I was shooting solo for multiple years. I did meet Jeff. We traded some knowledge, did some infrared. He taught me some moves. I taught him some light painting.
Who's
stuff.
Jeff? No, I'm just kidding.
He's our fluffer. He's our
And, you know, I've found a few more people who have been pretty serious about it. We've got some people who drop in from time to time. But, you know, Denver isn't really close to anything. So we're not close to any light painters other than the ones that we kind of home grow. Mm-hmm. And that's why I mentioned earlier, Europe is pretty cool. You can drive the distance. I think I had a radius of 700 miles around Denver to get to the next light painter I knew of. When I was really trying to get into the series.
You're in the ocean in Europe with 700 miles.
Well, I mean, I dropped the same circle in Europe, and that's most of the continent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you've hit the coastline already.
So Nancy and I, you know, we're geeking out on travel, because we've actually gone over to Europe 3 times in the last 2 years to meet up with light painters. And it's been pretty cool. We shoot half the time, and we just do touristy stuff half the time. But
as since we're back on, you're connecting online. Is there a way for like listeners who are interested or viewers interested to like, is there a group page for the Denver ones or a forum online or something that they can check out these people and learn a little bit more?
Yeah, ColoradoLightPainting.com will take you to our Facebook page, and that's where we kind of coordinate the Colorado scene. There are so many light painting groups out there, Light Painters United, there's the Light Painting World Alliance, the Light Painting Brushes that I mentioned, the guy that makes the tools, he's got a group for that. And there's so many resources to learn these days. You know, even go back 5 or 6 years, and it was way more trial and error, and you actually have to meet up with someone in person to learn new moves. But you know, we've got so many people sharing stuff right now. I do run a group called Light Painting Lab, and the rule there is if you post a picture, you have to tell everybody how you did it. Mm. Maybe share what the challenges were, but there's no ego in that. That's all about education. It's all about sharing.
And that group's on Facebook?
On Facebook.
Awesome. Yeah, so it's just all the details on it. I think that'd be a great way to learn. We've talked about on another episode of I'm Not Famous is that, this geek community, you know, of all these things that we talk about are geeky, we've always kind of been the outsiders. So everybody's happy to partner up and share and network and do that because it's, you know, we've always being the outcasts, we're happy to take in the other outcasts, I guess the way to put it. So.
Sure. I mean, light painting has got long roots. Mm-hmm. You go back to basically the advent of the camera, and someone was like, oops, there's a streak. And then they started harnessing it intentionally. And, you know, you take artists like Man Ray and Picasso, and they are obviously a little bit more public. They're not quite the geek niche that we're in here. But, you know, you've got history going back 100 years of light painting, but we're really kind of seeing a new movement for it, new techniques, new technologies, that kind of stuff.
All right. Kerry, what are you light painting next week now?
Well, I definitely want to do the heart first. I feel like I failed at that. what I am fascinated by is sports. So a big thing that I've always wanted is a logo. The sports team in that. I've always been fascinated by that visual element, you know, mostly because the black negative. You know, I think anything on that negative just makes it intensify a lot more. So I've always been fascinated by more sports logos, just because that's close to my heart. I'm not a Marvel or DC guy.
You want
to
use Jaguars logo?
Are you saying this completely unprompted, or did you see my blog page where I did
the Broncos
logo out of light?
No, I did it unprompted. Might have seen that, but no, I that is a huge piece that I think for the local community and just your art in general. But let me ask it this way, right? You know, some of the stuff that you've done is very personal. It's very one-off. Do you ever see yourself doing mass-produced, more commercial, like what we just talked about, where you're producing 100 of those logos and selling those? Or do you like to identify it more as a personal, you know, piece where you spent 36 minutes on it, accidental stuff? Do you like that more? Or do you see yourself moving more commercial as time goes on?
I think if you asked any artist, do you want to have your art be able to pay for itself, most people would say yes.
Right.
So, you know, I've done some photo booths and gotten paid for it. I've got some software I wrote called Light Monster, which is basically video light painting, and you can see it being built as you draw it from a live video feed. I've got a tool called Ula, which is, all these things play into my art, but they're ways of maybe at some point making you know, some kind of contribution towards all the thousands of dollars of gear. But no, I think I like to introduce light painting to people in whatever capacity that is.
Right.
Now, once you get into the commercial side of things, it's a bit less free from the art side, and people are going to want to Photoshop it because that's what they're used to doing. And so that's kind of where you have to make the decision, do you want to step into that world? Because my art is, what can I do in a camera shot? But, you know, realistically, someone's going to make a flyer, they're going to use Photoshop and put stuff on it. If you're doing sports teams logos, you know, I'd certainly be up for that,
mm-hmm.
but no one's really come knocking with a check just yet, so.
Just yet.
I've done the Avalanche logo, and
right.
I've done the Broncos logo, and I did those as mosaics.
Okay.
So I took a big piece, chopped it up into pieces, light painted each individual piece, and then put them together. So you assemble them in post, but each individual shot is done.
See that one.
Yeah, we're going to put it right here. In our editing.
In post.
Right here.
No, we're gonna do a long expose. We're all gonna sit
yeah.
still for about 5 minutes
yeah.
to a long exposure. While no. Okay. So we talked a little bit about the Facebook groups people can find you, but before we get out of here, where can they find specifically you, like your websites?
Sure. I'm at danchick.com. My art is at hackthelight.com, and I do have a site that I built for coordinating photo mosaics called peaceout.com. That's PIECE. And
nice.
I think that's probably Dan Chick Photography and Art on Facebook.
Awesome. All right. Well,
but I do want to leave you with one more thing. You asked
absolutely.
About the gear.
Okay.
You can light paint with your camera phone. If you can do a long exposure on there, you can still do stuff. I go to concerts and I'm kind of, you know, focusing on the band for a second or two and covering it up and doing some streaks. Don't let the thought that you have to have expensive gear hold you back. Because if you got a camera that can do long exposure
yeah.
and you've got a match or a flashlight or a sparkler, you can start this.
We're gonna come back in here in a little bit, Jeff and I, and we're gonna
yeah.
see Carrie over here with his phone. Like
absolutely. I think that's a great point. So it's not really, you don't need to be a professional photographer to do this. You know, you can go out there and just explore it and continue to meet up with people like yourself to learn more about how to do it better, right? It doesn't, I mean, obviously mm-hmm. you spend, like you mentioned, a lot of money getting where you need to be, but you can also kind of, you know, get your way into it with a camera phone or other pieces.
I was in, I guess this was Berlin back in September, and there was a documentary made about the get-together that we had, and I'll just leave you guys with this. There's a guy from Belgium called Paleteth, and he's done some amazing stuff, but he is so humble, and the words that he left on this video, it doesn't matter, you know, the quality of what you're doing it to have fun. Obviously, if you make something that's, you know, oh my God, that's a great image, even better. But if you spin the steel wool and you don't make a masterpiece, but it's fun,
yeah.
it's worth doing. If you're getting together with your friends and doing something, it's worth doing. But if you take that attitude into it and, you know, you're gonna get what you get and have fun doing it, then yeah, it doesn't matter what
yeah.
your skill level is when you start, and all you do is move up from there.
Exactly. Awesome. All right.
The more you know.
All right. Well, that was it for this week on I'm Not Famous. Once again, Dan Chick, thank you for joining us. But for Carrie, I'm Iggy, and we're not famous.
Yet.
Yet. Famous in Japan.
Famous in Japan.
Three countries. All right. Until next week on Project Nerd, goodbye.
Peace out.
Credits.
Awesome. All right. We got to do our 30 seconds.